From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation or on the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM Split Show for you again tonight. Later on, The Conscious Evolution with Barbara Marks Hubbard. Get ready for that. Here's what's happening. Well, as you've probably have heard by now, the U.S. avoided a feared and catastrophic default on the American debt as lawmakers passed a measure that ties an agreement to raise the government's capacity to borrow to steep cuts in government spending. Now, the Senate passed the measure a day after it passed the House of Representatives, and President Barack Obama quickly signed it into law. Over there at coasttocoastam.com, we've got an Insta poll going for you. Go ahead and register your vote. We're asking you, are you satisfied with America's new debt agreement? Yes, no, and then there's a little option there. Either way, we are headed for financial Armageddon. I'm not going to tell you the results. Don't want to spoil your own vote, but go ahead and do what you do. The emergency bill increases the nation's $14.3 trillion cap on borrowing, thus avoiding the default just hours before the midnight deadline, and begins the process of curbing the country's spiraling debt. Or does it? And it also creates a super Congress, six Democrats, six Republicans, to hammer out our budgetary policy for approval. But what else will they do? Here's award-winning documentary filmmaker and host Alex Jones. Alex, this is a strange one, isn't it?
George, I have never seen anything of this magnitude. They've raised the debt limit dozens of times. That's a smokescreen or a hoodwink. In fact, Moody's and S&P say that we're going to lose the AAA rating. Regardless, they're already hyperinflating the currency, as you cover with all the economists you interview every week. Ron Paul has said it's a disturbing total power grab. This, even the Associated Press, Huffington Post, ABC News, are calling this a new form of government, but it's not getting any attention. Six members of the House, six in the Senate, the president. So that's a total of 13, a council of 13. They now bring forward the bills on spending and cuts and all the important business. And if the House and Senate don't say yes in an up or down vote, then, quote, the council takes control. And to override that, instead of taking a 51%, as it's always done with our elected representatives, it takes a two-thirds majority. And so the system is positioning us towards bankruptcy, and they don't want the people to be able to vote. No filibusters, part of our government for 235
years. And no changes, nothing. Now, we've had a few committees in the past, Alex. During the Reagan administration, they put little committees together to hammer things out. But this group seems like it's got some power that some of these past committees never had.
Exactly. No. Past committees were to organize bills and then ask members to sponsor them. This is completely different, as you just said. No amendments, no filibusters. It's brought to them. Now legislation will originate. And Harry Reid is in mainstream news, even CBS News, saying that we can cover everything. And so now all these anti-gun bills, all these victim disarmament bills that could be blocked with a filibuster or with an amendment, or that needed two-thirds to pass, now it only needs 51%. I tell you, George, I was even blindsided by this. Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Republican side of the Senate, 2 weeks ago proposed giving, quote, President Obama the power of the purse, and constitutional scholars across the political spectrum said, that's crazy, you can't do it. And he said, don't worry, we'll do the super Congress. So what's scary is both Republicans and Democrats have voted for this, and Ron Paul, Judge Andrew Napolitano, many others, have stated this is unconstitutional. But the thing is, these lawyers just do it in a slick, calm way, like you're talking about the price of tea in China, like it's no big deal. And these are huge things. And notice the Senate, as you just said earlier, passed this today, and they announced, well, that still won't fix your debt rating. We are being positioned to be imploded by design for economic conquest. And I'm just very thankful that Coast to Coast AM and others are actually covering this, because it's one thing to be able to announce tyranny. It's another thing to be able to implement it. And the question is, will our republic die with a bang or a whimper? We can still save this country, but it shows how desperate the ruling elite is right now.
Keep your magnifying glass out, Alex, and keep looking, all right?
Thank you, George.
Alex Jones, Infowars.com. In a moment, by the way, political scientist Joel Skousen joins us as we react to this and some other incredible stories. Americans cut their spending in June for the first time in nearly 2 years after seeing their incomes grow by the smallest amount in 9 months. The latest data offered a troubling sign for an economy that is adding few jobs to date and barely growing. A Texas lake that turned blood red this summer may not be the sign of the end times, but probably is the end of a popular fishing and recreation spot. A drought has left the O.C. Fisher Reservoir in San Angelo State Park in West Texas almost entirely dry. The water that is left is stagnant, full of dead fish, with a deep opaque red. The color has some apocalypse believers believing that it's an early sign of the end of the world. But the Texas Parks and Wildlife folks say no, the bloody look is the result of bacteria which thrive in oxygen-deprived water. However, a multi-state outbreak of Salmonella bacteria contaminated ground-up turkey has sickened 77 people, resulted in one known death. Some 26 states reported the illness between March 1st and August 1st. Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania reporting the most cases of those 26 states. A 40-year-old father from the United Kingdom who is dying from heart failure is set to leave the hospital after receiving an artificial heart, and then he will wake and wait for possibly a heart transplant. Matthew Green is ready to go home and await a transplant after surgeons in the UK replaced his heart with an implant. His new plastic heart is powered by a portable driver in a backpack, and he said it has revolutionized his life. It is thought to be the first time a UK patient has been able to go home with an entirely new artificial heart. 900 similar operations have been carried out around the world. Christian Wild, author, researcher. This is another tremendous story, but how weird would this be knowing that you had an artificial heart in you, Christian? Could you handle that?
Well, sometimes you might just have to handle it.
Yeah, you have no choice.
Well, let's go back in history, George. In 1982, the world held its collective breath as a fellow by the name of Barney Clark became the first patient in history to have his own natural heart removed from his body and replaced with the Jarvik 7. If you recall, the whole world was watching that case because it was so revolutionary.
That's right.
He lasted 112 days and then died. But that was the beginning of artificial heart surgery and invention. We can segue to the HeartMate 1, which came along several years later, and that would give a patient about a year while they were waiting for their heart transplant. We know that 3,000 people a year die waiting for the transplant.
That's the big thing here.
Yeah, it is the big thing, and I didn't realize it till recently, but it's not necessarily that a heart doesn't become available. It is that the heart that became available was too large for an individual because it has to fit your natural size.
Sure.
Here comes, in 2009, HeartMate 2, which is what Dick Cheney has, and that gives him about 10 years, whereas the earlier ones were just a short period of time. So, yes, ideally, we want to take care of the heart we have, that we don't need this, but it is a backup. And before, you know, there's 40 hospitals in the United States doing this particular unit, but before long, we will have hearts built from stem cells. They're working on it right now at the University of Minnesota. Dr. Doris Taylor is very much involved in that science and technology. But in the meantime, we take care of what we got.
What's new with the Wild Stem Cell and Turmeric Research Report?
Well, you know what's amazing to me, George, is that people say they didn't know where they could have gotten this information because it's just not out there. And what it does is it brings hope to families and individuals who are dying of some kind of a catastrophic disease and have no idea that there is hope for them, and it's just around the corner. And many of these people have been able to get involved in trials that they would never have heard about except for the research report.
Christian's website, myheartbook.com. Thanks, Christian. The Food and Drug Administration has warned the manufacturer of the melatonin-laced brownies called Lazy Larry that the government considers them unsafe and could seize them from store shelves. The warning letter, which was sent to the company last week, Lazy Larry was until July known as Lazy Cakes, but the Memphis-based company that makes them changed the name after some lawmakers and public officials expressed concerns about the brownies. Melatonin is a naturally occurring hormone that helps regulate the sleep-wake cycle. The brownies can make those who eat them very sleepy, and the manufacturer advertises them as a stress reliever. Joel Skousen joins us next. Maybe he's going to relieve a little stress on us, or maybe we'll hear more things we don't need to know, but we have to hear. Up next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Joel Skousen, political activist, scientist by training, author, Strategic Relocation, North American's Guide to Safe Places. He specializes in foreign policy as well as the philosophy of law and U.S. constitutional theory. Joel, editor of the World Affairs Brief, former Marine infantry officer, fighter pilot, and is intimately familiar with security and defense-related issues. Here he is back on Coast to Coast. Quite a time these days, Joel, isn't it?
Never a dull moment, George. It's incredible how I used to be able to do this brief, part-time each week, and now it's really a full-time job keeping up with all of the rapid changes in our society.
It really is. What is your take, Joel, on this super Congress, this group of six Democrats, six Republicans, who apparently are going to have policy?
Well, I've got a little bit more of a moderate view than Alex does on this. What we've got here is not truly a super Congress. It is a joint reconciliation committee, just like you have any time you have a Senate pass a bill and a House pass a bill, and you have to have a joint committee. Now, the same process occurs here. The leaders of Congress really disregard what the members of Congress want, and they pick their buddies who will give them a declared result, and that's what's going to happen in here. Ron Paul has already said, the leadership has told him, you're not going to be on this committee. We only want people on this committee, you know, who are going to give us what the leadership wants, and so this is going to be a stacked committee. Alex is absolutely right about the fact that there will be no amendments. It's an up or down vote, majority rules on what their recommendation is. That is just like a joint reconciliation committee for any bill in the House or Senate where there's a difference and has to be reconciled. When that reconciliation bill comes out of committee, it is an up or down yes or no vote, no amendments. It's no difference. It is not true that this joint committee can bring up and pass any legislation or declare any legislation and bring it up for an up or down vote. They can't pass gun control through this committee. They can only declare what cuts are going to occur or how those cuts will be administered in terms of Medicare or Social Security, any of those types of things.
So they can't say, we want to redo the health care law. We want to change that. They can't do that.
That's correct. They can only cut. This is a committee only authorized to declare what the cuts are going to be and what the triggers. Now, what's interesting is that they can, tinker with tax law and other things in terms of whether or not it cuts revenue. And to that extent, they're going to be able to write some law, but they're not going to be able to, say, go into gun control that doesn't have any issue relative to funding the federal government or the deficit.
Okay, and Congress still, the House, the Senate, they still have the right to pass these things, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. In other words, this is fairly dangerous. This is not truly an exclusive Congress that will now rule the nation. It's just not true. These will have more power than normal congressmen because what they come up with will not be subject to filibuster. It will not be subject to
change.
That's right. It's not subject to amendment. And so it really stiffens the process. It's what we call a fast-track process. Fast-track processes are dangerous, but I think we have to keep this into perspective. Let me just say, as a general observer of political things, as a political scientist for many years, the powers that be in this nation are very concerned about upsetting people too fast and too rapidly. Those people on our side of the spectrum, the conservative constitutional spectrum of the United States, have been drummed into them that there's going to be martial law imminently and there's going to be economic collapse imminently. But we've got to remember the powers that be are not dumb. These are not just stupid people making mistakes up there. These are people carefully crafting, manipulating the economy, politics, and we've seen manipulation in spades on this debt issue and obscuration of the truth. I mean, there are no cuts. Here they're talking about trillions of dollars, and there are no cuts in this bill that will be enacted before 2012 and only $35 billion in 2013. It was absolutely unnecessary to default. All of that was a charade. And what's striking to me, George, is that no Republican leader ever stood before Congress or the United States people and said, Obama's lying. He has the money to write Social Security. He has the money to pay the interest. We are not in danger of default. Well, we are in danger of default if you're going to spend everything you're currently spending, but you don't have to. And what I consistently pointed out to conservatives is that, you know, forget about the balanced budget amendment.
Sure.
That requires that you pass it. It's never going to be passed, and it gives them an excuse to raise taxes because, frankly, the people who want the benefits in government outnumber the people who want tax cuts or want to keep taxes the same. So we would get outvoted in that. But I said to, you know, Republicans, you have the power right now. You don't have to have a majority. You simply have to sit on your hands and not vote for this debt increase. And it forces the government to start to have to stay within their means. It forces them. It's already the law. You don't have to pass anything. You don't have to go before the states with two-thirds to pass an amendment to the Constitution. It's a done deal. But what you have to do is go before the American people and say, now remember, Obama's going to have to pick and choose what he pays for. And if he tells you that he can't pay Social Security, he's lying to you. If they tell that to the American people, Obama wouldn't be able to get away with holding Americans hostage to claiming that the government is totally shut down and we can't pay veterans and we can't pay the military. Completely unnecessary.
Wall Street seems to be on top of this, Joel. They don't like it. The stocks continue to go down, down, down. Gold continues to go up. What do they see that most Americans aren't seeing?
Well, you know, these people deal in numbers all the time, and you can fool the American public into saying that we had a deal and everybody's happy and we're going to be able to. But everybody knows the basics, that you can't solve the debt problem by taking on more debt, and you can only postpone it. And they know that that's what this has done, is postpone even the debt limit now to another 6 months when they'll have to do it again. Every time this joint committee comes back with cuts, the up or down legislation will also coincide with another debt limit increase. They've got these incrementalized now. So we're going to have the whole thing later done over again in 6 months. And I think they're just going to keep shoving it down the road because there is no political will, George, none in Congress to seriously cut benefits because they outnumber us. There isn't a single congressman, except perhaps Ron Paul, because he's got his district completely educated about what's right in government, but nobody else could survive by cutting Social Security and Medicare. They're just not going to survive. So one of the things about this super Congress is it allows the Congress to say, well, we didn't do it. We just authorized this super joint committee to do it, and they can get the blame. And this is all about evading blame.
Yeah,
so they go before the people and say, hey, you know.
And I've got to guess, as soon as the president signed this, I bet they all sat back, took a sigh of relief, and went out and got a bottle of wine. And they think they've done their job now, don't they?
Yeah, and there's only 20 real heroes of this country who said, I'm not voting for this. Ron Paul, as usual, absolutely consistent about these things. The establishment really worried about this guy because there's a tremendous amount of backlash in this country against what Congress is doing. And he's the only one who really comes out stacked high against Obama when you put him into the polls as to what would happen. But
he's not a media darling, Joel. No.
And they're going to destroy him. They're going to evade him. In fact, I think they're flooding the Republican market for president with so many candidates that they'll have an excuse to say, oh, we got to cut this down. Anybody below 10% in polls, can't be on the debates. They want Ron Paul out of those debates because he's the only one who stands up against continual warfare. He's the only one who stands up with a sane view of the economy and this debt situation, and they don't want him to dominate these debates, which he wins in the straw polls after every debate.
He does all the time. And then online polls, he wins hands down as well. Joel, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment. Split show tonight. So we've got Joel Skousen for 2 hours. We'll take calls next hour with him. His book, Strategic Relocation. When we come back, he has his own thoughts on where all this is headed. And when you hear it, you just might not believe it. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Now take a moment, make our website, coasttocoastam.com, one of your favorites, so you don't have to type it in all the time. So you go ahead and do that, and then you can sign up for our Facebook page. You can get that link straight off the website. You can also sign up for our free news e-letter called The Coast Zone. And also for less than 25 cents a day, you can become a Coast Insider and get some huge benefits there, plus podcasting and downloads of past programs. So you can get all that by simply going to coasttocoastam.com. When we come back, more with Joel Skousen as we talk about his work, strategic relocation, and also this economic mess on Coast to Coast AM. Joel, over the years, you've looked at a lot of episodes. You've looked at a lot of ways that governments create their own diversions. You've got your thoughts on this one, too. Tell us.
Well, I don't believe this is a diversion, even though, you know, they do like to, when the government gets in trouble, they like to throw up diversions occasionally to dissuade people from, you know, looking at the facts. But what we have here is we have constant manipulation by powerful forces that have insider contracts that don't follow the law. They don't follow the rules, the same one that we have to live with. I mean, like the Fed and the people who are part of the Fed. I mean, these people literally can write a check to themselves anytime they want. They don't even have to reveal it to Congress. They literally can print money, create credits as they want to. But the fundamentals of life, of people, of free market economies comes in clashing with this manipulation. And what we're seeing is they have been basically writing themselves a free check for so many years. Look, politicians love deficit spending because they are allowed to get an agenda like these this conflict creation agenda that I've talked about before on your show about the globalists and what they want to do to strip Americans of sovereignty. They need conflict. They need wars to do this. Well, you know, wars would be extremely unpopular if every man, woman, and child in America got a bill for $3,000 a year for these wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. That'd be $12,000 to $16,000 per family. You'd have outrage. They'd all be anti-war. They'd all say, get us out. We have no business. They'd get a bill for $8,000 for foreign aid, and they get a bill for this. I mean, you see, they love deficit spending because they never have to tax the people. That's why they've been giving us tax cuts while spending has been increasing. They want to give everything to everybody. That's the way politicians, unless you're a principled person like Ron Paul and about 20 others in Congress, that's the way they operate. They're never going to stop doing that.
No, okay? not at all. And that's their way of thinking they're going to calm people down.
That's right. But in reality, my analysis is this, and even though I have a lot of prognostications that are draconian way down the line, the point is we're dealing with some conspiracies here. I really enjoyed the interlude between the thing when you talked about how, you know, conspiracies really are real. Some are false and some are propped up, but there are real things and real evidence and real facts.
Yep.
And I deal with that with my World Affairs brief each week about this view of what they're really up to, what are they trying to do, and who's playing what. And, you know, it's not that everybody who voted for this bill is part of a conspiracy. They have all kinds of way of twisting arms, of luring people in, of promising them power and wine, women, and song, the things that have been going on for history, since the history began. There's a lot of different ways to manipulate people without locking them into a total conspiracy. That doesn't mean there aren't a core group of people that really are planning bad things for this country that don't have our interest at heart. But they're not stupid enough to pull martial law at the least little drop of a hat, because it would cause everyone to suddenly say, yeah, maybe there really is a conspiracy. This is totally unnecessary. Look at the backlash against the TSA. I mean, for all of their draconian things.
Oh, sure.
Really unnecessary, and they are having to manage this. The only reason they don't back away from this is that the powers that be have a real agenda to get people used to cradle-to-grave transportation and movement controls, just like the Nazis had during World War II. You know, your papers, please. That is coming, and they aren't backing off of this, even when they're, I mean, they back off a little bit. You know, we're not going to.
And then they go forward. They take one step back, two forward.
That's right. But when it comes to this economy, they're not going to let it crash precipitously. It has to come eventually. You know, right now, we're probably going to eat up all of our $2.2 trillion in federal revenue in debt payments by 2025 if interest rates stay the way that they are. It could even come sooner if interest rates rise. Now, that's why they're manipulating interest rates downward to keep this federal deficit, you know, from coming to a conclusion too soon. They have an agenda of how they're going to work out an escape clause. They want to be able to get out of this without blame, just like 9/11. You know, we didn't know. You know, we were totally blindsided. Nobody deserves to be fired for this. Same thing with Pearl Harbor. We didn't know. You know, just a flat-out lie. And when this debt crisis comes eventually, they want an excuse to say, hey, it's not our fault. And what I think they're going to do is continue to milk this along. It'll be a downward slope. The dollar will continue to lose value, but other currencies will too. We've got to remember there's not a single gold-backed redeemable. And it's not just to say, you know, our central bank has gold. That doesn't matter. Unless the currency, the piece of paper, is redeemable in a fixed amount of a commodity like gold or silver, it's not a gold-backed currency. And that's why Nixon took us off the currency, the gold-backed redeemability portion in 1979. That was a default, by the way.
That's right.
Our government already did a major default, and the world was mad about it because the only reason we got the world to go on the dollar standard was the promise of redeemability. And then we reneged on it when, of course, they started printing. Well, a lot of people think that hyperinflation is going to just around the corner, but I'm telling you that it isn't. Just because of the quantity of dollars that we've spread around the world, the international dollar...
Yeah, they will hold the rates down as long as they can.
That's right. And the international quantity of dollars that have been monetized is about $200 to $300 trillion. So let's suppose the Fed prints, you know, $3 trillion. And a lot of them say, oh, that's hyperinflationary. But really, hyperinflation in terms of the money supply has to do with how much you dilute what's existing. And when you got that much money out there, that's only 1%. That's not hyperinflation. And that's one of the reasons, besides, you know, manipulating the CPI as they do every year, and they're starting to do it again to keep inflation, the appearance of inflation, about 50% of what it really is. Nevertheless, they can get away with a lot more inflation than people think without it turning into hyperinflation. I mean, you got to get above 20% before you really get into what is hyperinflation. People start to dump their dollars, and you got to spend it before the prices rise. And we're a long ways away from that.
But you think this could lead to a major conflict?
And the reason I say that is they've got a lot of agendas that war serves. But one of those is the ultimate debt, the ultimate default, and the way to walk away scot-free. If they can postpone this thing until they bring us a world war, and believe me, they've been covering for Russia and China and their war preparations, and a lot of people, you know, because the American government does not warn us, does not say that Russia is a threat. I mean, you never have a Pentagon yearly assessment of the Russian threat. You have one on China, and they downplay it at the end of the assessment each time. And that's because China's further behind than Russia.
And Putin called us parasites on the world economy.
Yeah, and it's going to get worse. He's going to get more and more bellicose. You're going to start to see him act like Hitler in the sense of when the rearmament becomes. But, you know, what's interesting is that this government knows everything that I know and more, and they aren't saying a thing. In fact, when 1997, you know, when I was on with Art Bell on this show, you know, I talked about the fact that front page New York Times, here was a big satellite picture of this big underground base called Yamato Mountain in the Ural Mountains, as big as the Washington, D.C. metro area underground. And the Russians were claiming it's a mining. You know, of course, there were freight cars going in there, not mining cars. And the New York Times goes to the CIA and says, well, what do you think about this? And they say, oh, we're not worried. It's defensive. And my question is, which the press should have been asking, how do you know it's defensive? Have you ever been inside? No one to this day has ever been inside Yamato Mountain, and yet we're claiming it's no defense. It's defensive, and we're claiming that Russia is in complete compliance with all treaties, and yet we know darn well we can't get into 50% of their nuclear manufacturing facilities because they're secret and off limits.
Who would start this war, Joel?
Well, the Russians are going to start it, and the Chinese are going to back them. I think what we're going to see, but before I go into this scenario, just let me say, this war will allow our leaders to come out of their bunkers and someday say, oh, the Russians and Chinese deceived us. We didn't know this was going to happen. And by the way, you know, Washington, D.C. has been destroyed, and so has New York City. All the computers are gone. you know, we're going to have to start all over financially. All the debts are gone, and they're going to get away with it.
What will be left, though?
Well, believe it or not, there's a lot that can be left from a nuclear first strike. In the first place, Russia and China are delighted with the fact that the United States, with its constant intervention around the world, is quickly gaining the reputation as the bully of the world.
Yes, that's true.
And Americans don't see that. But you go overseas, and in NATO, in Europe, and especially in the Middle East, or in Serbia, or in Bosnia, boy, if you're an American, you are just glared at. They hate it.
And they're letting us do it. There's a reason why they're letting us do it, isn't there? They're not even attempting to stop this.
That's right. They're not attempting to stop it. In fact, they're exacerbating, and that's why they keep intervening around the world, and they keep bringing up hatred. And even in the countries we're not invading, the CIA is undermining governments. They overthrow people. And everybody in the know knows that the CIA is really a problem.
By the way, let me ask you this, and let's come right back to this because this is critical. Why haven't we done anything with Syria yet? I mean, 175 people got killed today again. I mean, that's worse now than Libya. How come we haven't touched that?
Well, I've got an answer for that. Do we have time now before the break?
We've got 12 minutes, so sure.
Oh, great. Yeah. Well, the problem with Syria and Libya is, first of all, it's part of it because of Libya and Egypt. We essentially turned Syria into a hard case. The United States was attempting to cause a domino effect of breaking down all these dictators that they had been supporting for years. Mubarak in Egypt, and of course Omar Gaddafi, they've been supporting him. They gave him a clean bill of health.
Saddam we supported?
That's right. Saddam we have supported. He was our boy. We betrayed all of these. Syria sees the handwriting on the wall and says, hey, I'm not giving in. I'm not buying this, of exile. You have a heart attack and you get knifed in the back. I'm going to fight it out. We are responsible for the hardline response of Bashar al-Assad in Syria. And, he's played ball with the CIA. He used to run secret prisons for them. He tortured people on behalf of the CIA. He feels betrayed. And he's not about to believe in any reconciliation that the West offers.
And now he's killing his own people.
Well, they see this as the CIA. The CIA is, in fact, fomenting a lot of this. And it isn't as if they started this with just killing innocent civilians. The real story is that in the first city where this started, these protesters actually shot police and military. And that's what started the gunning down. And to this day, that story has not made the press in America.
No, not at all.
It started with protesters actually shooting and killing police and military. And so that immediately triggered a justification that we've got to treat these guys rough. And that has continued now. They are determined to win this. They know that the CIA is providing agent provocateurs and all kinds of impetus to the Syrian opposition. And when I say this, I'm not defending Assad as a nice guy. This guy is a dictator. But I'm making the point that when the United States went in to provoke these things, and they could have done this years ago, but they didn't. They picked a time now because they have an agenda, which we can talk about, relative to war and creating this hatred of America throughout the Middle East.
What's your timeline, Joel, for this supposed Russian-Chinese conflict?
I don't think it's going to come any closer probably than a decade. In other words, we have time to stop it or prepare it. But I'll tell you, here's an interesting sign. Once the government starts to warn us that Russia and China is a threat, it'll be too late.
Yeah.
Mark my words. When you hear them start to warn, it's only because it's too late and they know it.
And you think it would be a first strike?
That's right. It's going to be a first strike. That's the Russian. Every Russian defector has said, and every military exercise in Russia begins with a simulated first strike, nuclear weapon strike, missile strike on America.
There will be retaliation, I hope.
Well, let's look at that fact. You know, PD-60, another thing that I had the pleasure of announcing, or the agony of announcing on with Art Bell on Coast to Coast in 1997, PD-60 was signed by President Clinton, instructing our military not to rely on the process of launch on warning.
That's right.
I mean, it's suicidal.
It is suicidal.
Because launch on warning when you sense a launch from Russia or China and those missiles are in the air, you can get your missiles out of the silo. So those missiles coming in, hitting empty silos.
Well, and we were told when I was in the Navy, our submarines were the deterrent, that all nations were petrified of the fact that within minutes we could launch. And, to take the first hit is crazy.
Well, and our military doesn't realize that the order is still in existence. I've talked to people within the Air Force and the missile services, and they say, look, you're wrong, Joel. I mean, we have these drills, and we can press the button, as long as we get orders from the White House. And I said, that's the point. You can't do a thing until you get the launch codes from the White House.
And what's the definition, Joel, of a first strike? One missile or 50?
Well, in this case, it's going to be about 3,000 warheads, in my estimation.
All right, because, if 3,000 warheads were launched all at one time against us, and we're going to absorb that, there'll be nothing left of this country.
That isn't true, because it takes about 3,000 warheads just to hit the military communications and other targets around the world. And it does. And the Russians and Chinese are not going to, in my opinion, hit just civilian populations and cities. They don't want to be branded as the bully of the world. They want to say, we had to take down and stop the bully of the world from continuing to intervene and occupy around the world. And we're handing that excuse to them. We handed an excuse
Will these be 3,000 nukes?
Yes, they will. I'm saying they're going to take about 3,000 targets to be hit to blind the American military, what's left of it. Every one of the major bases of the United States, in Colorado Springs, for example, San Diego, Seattle, with the missile bases and the submarine bases there, Kings Bay, Georgia, Jacksonville, Florida, all of these major bases, Norfolk, Virginia, Washington, D.C., all these nerve centers are going to get attacked. Omaha, Nebraska, major military bases are all going to get nuclear weapons put down on them. But still, that would only allow or provide about 20% casualties within the United States. The rest of the people can survive, and especially if they have some fallout protection.
Yeah, well, what kind of quality of life are we talking about, Joel?
Well, believe me, the nuclear winter scenario is false. Nuclear radiation dissipates within 2 to 3 weeks, and it's really not deadly after 2 weeks. And a lot of people will survive. A lot of people will get sick. A lot of people say to me, well, look, we're all going to die in this anyway, so why prepare? Well, I said, that's the problem. You don't die.
What happens?
Wish you were dead because you're sicker than a dog, and a lot of people are dying. But believe me, I think about 80% of Americans will survive, and our leaders will all survive. This continuity of government, these big, modern, new fallout shelters they're building, they're not doing that for terrorism, George.
No, not at all. Not at all.
They know this big strike is coming. Why else would they have said, don't rely on
What happens?
The reason they told the military not to rely on a retaliation or a launch on warning is because the White House does not intend to give them the launch codes, and we're not going to launch on warning.
What happens, Joel? What happens if in 10 years, this timetable you're talking about, there is a president who will give those launch codes?
Well, hopefully it would be a president that would deter the strike by building up and cutting off all the arms and the technology from China and Russia and stopping their weapons rearmament process and stopping this suicidal disarmament and start to give the message to the American people, look, we can't shelter everyone like they're doing in Russia, et cetera. Everyone, we encourage you to build a fallout shelter and try to and get a decent missile, anti-ballistic missile system. A lot of Americans don't realize that our missiles don't have warheads on them. It's like hitting a bullet with a bullet coming in at super, supersonic speed.
Yeah, no, I know that.
We need to put warheads on those missiles so that we've got a chance of stopping a lot of these warheads, and we need to, make 100 times more of these anti-ballistic missile systems to protect these cities that are vulnerable. And our government is doing nothing except build defenses for themselves. In fact, one of the interesting things is when I do my architectural work of designing high-security systems and shelters for people, when I go to Colorado and I talk to Congress, oh, yeah, we know how to do that. And I said, well, how do you know? Well, we've just done all these for this guy's ex-CIA and this guy's ex-DEA and this is ex-State Department, and they all know a big war is coming, and they all have shelters and bomb shelters in the basements of their houses and these ski resorts in the Colorado Rockies.
Joel, stay with us. We're going to take phone calls when we come back in just a moment, and we'll also get into your new work, Strategic Relocation. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.